Voices Radio Network.
The views and opinions of Muscle Minds is for entertainment and educational purposes only.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's first bionic man. Better than he was before. Better, stronger, faster.
Welcome to Muscle Minds with Dr. Scott Stevenson and Scott McNally, part of the Advices Radio Network, a new voice in bodybuilding podcasting.
Welcome back to Muscle Minds. I'm Scott McNally, and with me as always, Dr. Scott Stevenson. Scott, I didn't try anything different today. I just said your name because there's nothing else we really need to say. You're here. How's it going, man?
That's perfect. Have you gotten into the habit of trying out new introductions? Just something like maybe a kind of a Banji to Meiji type of, like, you know. Try a new twist every time?
Not so much, but when I first started recording the shows, I actually would practice to myself for like 5 minutes walking around the house because I was nervous. Like, I used to get really nervous recording the shows.
Right, yeah.
And I wanted to make sure I did it right and stuff. But anyways, I just want to tell everybody, guys, you are listening to Muscle Minds. We are part of the Advices Radio Network. I am here with Dr. Scott Stevenson. You are actually a doctor, as in that you are a professor. Where have you taught, Scott?
Ooh, we are getting off. We are starting with a novel topic. So, yeah, well, first of all, the doctor thing is interesting because
go off too far, because here's my goal right now. I want to let everybody know what they're hearing, and I want to tell them what they're in for, because we might have some people who've never heard the show before.
That's true. So yes. I have a PhD in exercise physiology, and I was a college professor just for a couple of years out in California, Cal Poly Pomona. And then my adventures led me actually to become an acupuncturist. So actually now my legal title in the state of Florida is acupuncture physician, which is just plenty confusing. It's funny because my dad is a third generation ophthalmologist. Oh. So he's a doctor back in Illinois. And when I was, no one knows really what exercise physiology is. It just, that's not like, you know.
Except for us, us meatheads.
Yeah,
too.
But the average person, it's like, those that kind of like physical therapy. It's like, yeah, sort of physical therapy. So when I first got my PhD, I'd go back to my hometown and everyone just presumed, you know, your mom said you're a doctor now. Like, well, can you take a look at my knee? And I'm like, no, I'm not really that kind of doctor. And then years later, I went back and I actually could take a look at their knee, because that's one thing acupuncturists would do. But I can't do it really here because I'm not licensed in this state. So people were just like, it was really kind of funny, the conversations I had, because people will misconstrue what the doctor refers to. So
okay, so guys, that's what you're listening to. Muscle Minds here. I'm Scott McNally. You know, you hear me on a lot of the shows. I'm just the guy who introduces stuff, but we are just gonna talk about what's going on in bodybuilding to start the show out, and then we have a bunch of questions. Scott and I usually get through just a handful because we end up going pretty in depth. Just wanted to throw that all out there. And, you know, we're presented by FortitudeTraining.net. That's Scott's training program. So, guys, check that out and check out the Fortitude Training program. You can get the ebook over at the site and check out everything else that Scott's up to. So I just thought to myself, I thought it would be my professional duty to say stuff like that. You know what I mean, Scott?
Yeah. A little refresher. Yeah, that's cool. I appreciate that.
Yes. So and I figured the audience will, too. So I just got back from Junior Nationals, and I'm proud to say, man, that I had a guy turn pro.
It's awesome.
I'm pumped.
What a cool feeling. Yeah.
IFBB pro Joe Russo, classic physique. See, I was so excited, man. And I actually had some questions for you that I wanted to ask you, just because we're moving on now. You know, we're moving up. He is going to try to put the finances together to jump right into the Chicago Pro, which is just around the corner now.
Yeah. How many weeks out is that?
It's just a few. I think two, three.
Two yeah. weeks, I think. Yeah.
2 weeks. He's in shape, though. You know, the guy has a lot of muscle. And, you know, we talked to Terrence Ruffin on the last episode. You obviously, he might not be at the top end of the new weight because I believe he's allowed more weight now. And
like 7 pounds or 5 pounds, something like that.
Which he could use it. We had to really pull water. I mean, he had to go through a full water depletion in order just to get on the scale, on Thursday, and then we had to, you know, play with water up through Friday and into the show on Saturday morning. So it was a little trickier. We won't have to do all that, which would be nice. But you know, you're the coach of IFBB Pro, longtime pro Dave Henry, who is. He's in a when we talk pro bodybuilding, he's at a different level because he is what I would say a tier one pro. He stood on stage with all the greats and he's done battle with them. He's hung, he's beat a lot of them, and you've worked with him for a long, long time. In fact, you're the only person that's coached him. What is the difference in your mind? Of course, we all want everybody to be the best they can be, whether they're at the state level show, whether they're at a local show or whether they are at, you know, the pro level or take it further at the Olympia level, like Dave has so many times. What's the difference in between coaching somebody that's going to that level? What advice can you give me, Scott, on coaching Joe into something like the Chicago Pro versus junior nationals or say even the Michigan State Championship?
Ironically enough, I'm going to say is don't worry about the level at which you're competing, do the things that have been working the whole time.
Fair enough.
And just, and it's sort of along the same lines of like, this can be done to some degree because this comparison can be helpful and it fits here well. But you know, a lot of people will ask, interview question will be like, so, you know, what do you think of your competition? How are you coming up to go against your competition? And like that sort of strategy works with sports, like one-on-one sports or team sports. But in bodybuilding, you know, the stuff's pretty obvious, especially by that point. It's like, okay, I need more legs. My chest is weak, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's not a whole lot you can possibly do except maybe posing.
Yeah.
You know, you can tune to his strengths. But these are all the same strategies you'd use at any level.
Yeah,
the national level or the local level. I mean, he probably, obviously, as good as he is, you know, earlier on with local shows, he could just be a sloppy poser and he probably would have won.
Yeah.
So now he's just got to be better at everything that he was already good at. So, but you can use that. I guess you can, you know, see the comparison when he gets up on stage with those guys, and it will, you know, his flaws will be exposed.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's kind of what I was thinking, was it's going to be the smaller details. That's what's going to make the difference. It's going to be, you know, at say a novice show, if your tan isn't perfect, you know, your trunks don't fit exactly, they might be like, okay, well, you know what? We see a lot of potential in you. You know, we see a lot of potential in you, and that for these reasons, they are willing to overlook those things, and somebody may still do really well. And then that's just kind of what I was thinking, was that the next step, you know, getting to the state show, they might not give you as much, you know, forgiveness for little details. And as we go on further, I know that's true that at the national level that, you know, everything has to be right. Your tan has to be right. Your posing needs to be nailed. And that was what I could imagine, is taking Joe to the show. We were going to need to make sure all those details were just, including especially posing, is at its all-time best. That makes sense.
Yeah, a lot of those guys. I mean, I remember, and I haven't looked as closely in the last maybe 6 months or so, but early on with Classic Physique, it was sometimes the posing was really bad.
Yeah.
It was. I mean, it was sort of kind of comical. It was like when you're getting like family pictures taken, and you do all like the sort of formal pictures, and then they just say, "Okay, do a crazy picture."
Yeah.
And everyone would do something different. That's what you'd see sometimes, like it's your favorite classical pose, and everyone is attempting to do something that makes them stand out, and they all end up being somewhat awkward.
Yeah, yeah. But that's so true.
It doesn't fly anymore. So, you know, you'll be able to like figure out which poses work for him and which poses don't, and only like absolutely show his best. He could beat probably most guys, you know, 9 out of 10 guys with any pose in the past. But now it's not going to work because that 10th guy is every one of those guys on stage with him.
Whew. Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing, man. It's going to be, it's going to be exciting. It'll be good. And you know what? I think he's already in shape and everything. He's already a big guy. There's no sense in, you know, it used to be popular to just jump in and just start competing. And then we've gone into the thing of like, hold off and wait a year or 2 years or 5 years. And then he comes back and who was that guy? You know, we don't remember him because he turned pro 5 years ago, but, I think that there are more people that are just turning it around and going right in. And I think it'll be fun. It'll be cool that way.
Yeah, it was interesting. So, you know, decades ago when there were very few pro cards earned in bodybuilding before the other divisions were even in existence, if you, like, won the overall to USA's, you were a badass. You could go right in and be able to compete. And guys did. People would do that. You can look back at, you know, people like Livroni and like, I mean, gosh, it took Flex Wheeler a few years to get his pro card because there was, I can't remember the exact order and who was beating him, but he didn't like blast through even the way that Phil Heath did.
Yeah.
And so then you were, once you got your pro card, you were ready to compete as a pro. And then it became somewhat watered down. They're giving out more pro cards. And in bodybuilding, it made sense that you might be a little bit low on size. Because you know the standards for earning a pro card weren't quite as strict, but now it's sort of things have come back around. He's already at the top of the weight class, or pretty close, like you said.
Yeah,
you know, you want something drastic, so the time off, there can be obviously improvements made and refinements made, and you know, bringing up weak muscle groups, you know, and of course posing, you know, it isn't an overnight process either.
Right,
but that's the beauty of these weight class base divisions is that weight or height is that you've, especially with classic, is that you're already there and you haven't had to, and this is part of, I think, the impetus for those too, is that the guys who are winning those haven't had to push the ends of their bubbles in terms of stress and drugs and everything else. They're not like totally maxed out where they're like, when they get done winning getting their card or what have you, they have to take a break because they've just, like, you know, at their wit's end.
Yeah.
It's more maintainable. You can do many more shows.
And like that's a lot of those guys do. And that's where I feel Joe is right now. He definitely didn't have to kill himself to get here. We were able to just slow things down and take our time for, I'm going to say, 6 weeks.
To the point where he was 5-6 weeks out, huh?
Yeah, it was to the point where I didn't want him to be stage ready at 6 weeks out, you know. So we slowed it down a little bit and we took our time. And to the point where he was even getting nervous because he's like, my weight's not dropping for several weeks in a row. I was like, that's because you're already, you know, 212. We don't need you to get any lighter than this, you know, 215. And then it didn't take a lot more to just kind of get that extra little bit off. He was definitely the leanest guy in his class too, which was cool. It was fun to see, man. And you know, we'll see where to go next. But I honestly, man, I didn't even want to admit that it was even a possibility. I just told myself, like, well, he's at least in the top three, probably in the top two. And then I just kind of held that to myself the whole time because I didn't want to, like, hype him up after prejudging and be like, I think you got this. I think you got, you know what I mean? That I feel like that'd be the worst thing you could do is pump somebody up and then they don't get it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the victory, this is, I've talked about this so many times. The victory in my mind is that is everything you've done during the course of the prep and everything that's led up to that. And if you hype up the notion of placing and getting your card, which is what a lot of people are kind of even out for. They just want the card.
Yeah.
I've got there's someone I know who was for about 2 years, a year and a half. She just wanted the card. I just want that card. I want that card. I want that card. And it was all about the card.
Yeah.
It wasn't about the journey. And she got her card. And then I don't even know that she probably works out, but she's not doing anything physique related at all anymore. She just sort of fell off. Yeah. Yeah. And I can't help but connect those two things, is that, you know, she was sort of searching for a kind of a fleeting trophy at the end there.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you think back and you say, you know, look, we got into shape. We planned this out perfectly. I didn't suffer. This was a great prep. I did a lot of really good things. I got better than I was before.
Right.
Like, check off all those boxes of the many victories that you had, and some of the, your prep in that way, as opposed to banking it all on whether or not you get your card or whether or not you place where you want to place. Then if you don't, then you throw away the rest of that stuff. It's all you basically are pitching all the other victories out psychologically.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
And that can make people bitter, and they can get, you know, they get pissed. It leads to Facebook rants and that kind of thing too, which obviously doesn't really serve much purpose except to kind of reinforce the idea that that's a response that you'd want to have.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's just sort of psychologically damaging in and of itself, I think.
Yeah. They had, 6 people in the first call out. So there was, you know, there was no definitive center guy, and they were moving 2 guys back and forth around him. Which in my mind was probably going to be, hopefully going to be second and third based off of what I was saying, but you never can tell, right? I mean, and even if there was only 5 guys and they had somebody in the middle, it's not always the case, right? That middle guy, it is oftentimes, but not always the case that they're lining them up for us, right?
Yeah, I think this obviously is sort of the rule of thumb is that you can, you know, you can use your mind reading abilities to know what the judges are thinking based on how they're moving people around. But that isn't like foolproof ESP at all. I've always said that, you know, literally judges, if you've got like just 3 people and you can comparing them all, you're not using peripheral vision to compare all 3 of them at once. You're looking at one, you look at the other one, there's some short-term memory involved. You're looking at you're just having to look back and forth.
Yeah.
And a good judge who's seen, you know, tens of thousands of physiques and compared them meticulously could literally, unless there's just a distance and an angle factor, that's why they move people around. Mm. It's really a matter of the fact that we have this kind of a physical limitation in that the stages are straight across, and you know, in an ideal world, like you would have judges that would sort of be like art around in some way, so they could have a good view of all the competitors at all times, but you simply can't. So the judges on the right need to have the competitors that are good on the left move close to them so they can make those comparisons. But they're still looking from competitor to competitor. And they still can make some comparisons between, you know, 2 guys that are 2 people away from one another, as long as their angle isn't just awful and the distance isn't too great.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, so the judges don't have to have them like, it's not like they're forecasting like this is the placement exactly. It's a good rule of thumb, but now with so many shows, I mean, I think they're probably, I mean, this is true for me. I've like seen so much more prejudging online, YouTube or Facebook or what have you, and then of course you read the comments, you know, about who people think is going to win or what have you, that idea is reinforced, that how they shuffle the athletes around is basically absolutely equivalent to the final placing. It's not, isn't. And ranting about that is like saying, you know, you're going out to dinner with somebody and it's like, I feel like a good steak.
Yeah.
And you go out to the restaurant and they look at the menu and they say, you know, that fish sounds really good. I'm going to have that. And you're like, what? What? you go off. It's like, I changed my mind. Like, I can do that, right? It's like,
right.
So get all pissed because you had him in the middle. He won.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's really what I wasn't thinking there at the whole time. I really was having someone else in first. And you saw that. You saw what the judges were doing, even though it didn't follow the, you know, the main rule of the middle guy is the one who's going to win.
It worked with my bias. I was trying to not be biased while I looked and say, you know, be honest with my eye, you know, and say, okay, well, what are they seeing? Not what do I want to see, but it still did work with my bias versus I think that probably does play an influence, you know, like if I'm the guy who's up there, I would like it to be that they moved me to the box. You know what I mean?
Oh, sure.
Like that's what I really want.
Yeah, that always feels good if you happen to like end up on the end.
Yeah.
And the first thing they do is move you to the middle.
Oh yeah, that gets my confidence level 10 times higher. You know.
Yeah, that really kind of tells you something, at least initially.
Right.
But sometimes just because of the way the they call out the numbers, like they've got their top five or six, and they just call them out in order, and they're just lining them up, you know, just to get everything organized. It may just so happen that the three guys in the middle are numerically in the middle too.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And they're just getting you out of the way. They're getting you out of the way. Yeah.
Yeah. Could be that too. Right. But could be those three guys are right there. They're in the middle and they don't need to move them around. The one guy ends up in the middle, but he might be third.
Right.
He's right next to the other two guys.
And I felt that before, you know, where I've ended up in the middle, but I can see there's more action going on at the left or the right, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, I've talked to, you know, so many people who get so upset. It's sort of, they just want to know, you know, like, let me know who won. Like, when the bridge judging comes around and you see what you think is the answer, it's like, all right, now I know. It's kind of like waiting for that package to arrive and your UPS notifications tells you it's supposed to get there by 8 o'clock that night or whatever. And then it doesn't come. And like, you're like, holy, you're so pissed. But if you had just been told it was going to arrive the next day from the get go, you wouldn't have been upset.
Yeah.
It would have been, okay, I'm not expecting it today. But so you get to the prejudging, you're expecting that order of the athletes to be the final placing. And so you just attach to that because, you know, you're wanting the result now.
That's a good analogy too with the package. I think everybody listening can relate to that.
Yeah, it is.
It's the worst.
Yeah, it is, especially if it's something you're really wanting to get. You know,
right. I don't even care how much I want it. They tell me it's there. I want it.
Right. Yeah, they're real smart on like. Like sometimes delivery estimates and that kind of thing, they know that, you know, they give you the outer range. So that when it gets early, you're just super happy.
Yeah. You know,
they give you the worst case scenario
to
avoid people just going bonkers. If you told them 5 days and it gets there in four, they're really happy.
Right.
But if you told them 4 days, which is the average, and you happen to be 5 days, then they're just pissed all to hell.
Or if you tell them four and it shows up on four, then they're just like, well, you did your job.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. You could tell them seven.
Right. You know? There you go. Stretch it out.
And then you would, wow, above and beyond the call. That was incredible. You know?
We should get a hold of UPS and give them our tips.
Oh, they know. Well, they do this. They do this. I've noticed this. Yeah. It would be interesting to see to sort of do, I'm sure someone has done this sort of thing, but basically maybe they've done this, you know, already, like customer service ratings. And you know, if you tell someone 7 days and it gets there in three and everything else is the same versus if you tell them 2 days and it gets there in three.
Yes.
You know, how do they rate their satisfaction with the product and the packaging, all sorts of things that have nothing to do with delivery. It's just the context in which they received the item.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's say, you know, someone actually ends up in second. Were they given two pro cards at the Junior Nationals year, first and second?
No, it's just first place.
Just first. Okay. So well, let's say like, I don't know, let's say it was second. Like, I think they still do that in bodybuilding at the Nationals. They keep on changing the way they do this. But let's say you end up, a guy goes out there and first two get their pro cards. And the guy's thinking, man, I just want to make top five, you know? And then he goes out and he gets lined up and he's right in the middle.
Yeah.
And everyone's telling him, dude, you got this. You won. Oh my God, this is great. This is incredible. And everything about the movement of the athletes suggests that he's in first place. And then he gets second and then he's pissed. Man, I should have beat that guy. I had him. He had no legs or whatever else. And it's like, no, your perception of would have been awesome the day before just to make top six and actually get your pro card and get second is now tarnished because of the expectation that came from the ordering of the athletes.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Our minds are so funny.
Oh, hey, Scott, off the topic of contests, which I mean, I had so much fun that I could probably talk about this for the whole show, honestly. And I probably will talk VJ's ear off on Bodybuilding Nerds this week. I wanted to mention, so this was right after we recorded the last episode. I saw this post and I listened to this episode, Dr. Scott Stevenson on Evolutionary Radio Podcast, Growth Hormone Revisited. So you did this show. This is a couple weeks ago now. It was a great interview, man.
Yeah, it was. I don't listen to my own podcast.
I know you don't.
Was the sound okay?
The sound was good. It was okay. No Muscle Minds, but you know, that's well, me. That's my biased take on it. It was a good show. They did a nice job. And dove deep into to growth hormone. And when I say dove deep, you guys talked about it for an extended period. And they were really looking for like almost like applications for the average guy that was a serious hardcore bodybuilder. You know, how do they add this into their program? How do they use this optimally? Really is that's the best way I think I would sum that up. It was a good show.
They were pushing me for a prescription, which I just, you know, don't do. And I don't think they realized that. One of the co-hosts, he thought I was from Canada. Actually, I think that stayed in there. Someone mentioned that to me that we had that I thought they clipped that out. But I try to, obviously, as people who listen to our podcast know, I try to give people the pieces of the puzzle and let them put it together in whatever way they will. So
yeah,
it's up to them. I'm not going to tell them how to do, how to use any particular drug, especially, you know, not one that's illicit.
Yeah.
You know, or that isn't, and I don't have, you know, I can prescribe herbs, but that's only if I've seen those people in person. So, they were really like really pushing for like, tell me exactly how to do it. And that runs counter to the main thing I'm trying to get people to do is think for themselves as much as possible.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's what that does. And growth hormone, you know, as far as like adverse effects. So they talked about this side effects. We covered this on the podcast. It's, you know, there are worse things that people in the course of bodybuilding put into their bodies as far as side effects and toxicity, without a doubt. But by becoming knowledgeable as much as possible, you learn how to avert those side effects to some degree or minimize them or avoid them, or maybe you just don't even take it because of those. Hmm. But you also, if something does happen down the road, your perspective on why that happened is completely different. If someone says, oh, you know, DNP is the best fat burner ever, and you're like, okay, you just take it without, you know, recognizing what it does, how it does what it does, you know, all the aspects of it. And then, you know, you end up, you know, really out of it and you, you know, wreck your car or you're just sweating like a fiend in a really important business meeting and, you know, your poor performance leads you being fired or whatever negative consequences come, then it's on you. You've made that choice as opposed to, or God forbid, like, you know, somebody says, you know, this guy told me this is how much growth hormone to take and this is what it's going to do for me. And you go about doing it and then you get arrested and you know, that sort of thing happening. So there's just so much to be gained from having that knowledge. And I just have a, you know, because of my training and my my desire to learn, have been able to pick up a lot of bits and pieces of useful information, lots of the puzzle pieces. And that's what I was trying to put forth is we didn't even get into some of the deep pieces about growth hormone because they kept on coming back. They didn't want to go there when I start to dive into like the isoforms and you know, variations in the receptor and those sorts of things. They kept on pulling it back to how much should we use and when should we use it.
Yeah. Then I liked your response. They had said, you know, if you're using a decent amount of growth, I can't remember what they were saying, 5+ units a day. And, you know, you start experiencing insulin resistance. The question was, you know, is insulin an answer for that? And you basically said, well, that would be a Band-Aid, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it would compound the problem. It makes, I think I explained why that makes sense.
You did.
You know, physiologically, but it is a Band-Aid. You know, eventually that's not reversing the underlying issue brought about by growth hormone. It's just, you know, it's just covering up. It's like, you know, you've got an axle that's cracking and you splint it, but the axle's still going to crack. And that's a big deal, you know?
Well, I will say that, even though, you know, that's what they were shooting for and you didn't give them necessarily the direct answers that they wanted, I feel like it was definitely good for kind of painting more of that picture. I'm totally in agreement that you don't necessarily need it spoon-fed to be told, hey, X amount of units, this and that, this time of day. Over time, that's part of the education that builds until, yeah, you can make those decisions yourself. And I was very entertained by it. I thought it was a good show. So it was definitely
good.
Yeah, something that I would suggest to others. And and I like that you stood firm too, which you always do. You know, you don't do that stuff here either. You're never looking to just directly, like you said, spoon feed people, you know, tell them this is how you do it exactly, you know, for everybody.
I part of that is simply because I don't think there are such black and white answers.
Yeah.
Like literally there are not. Like someone, I've had people, they ask me about, you know, gear, like what's the best stack for this, that, and the other. And there are biological reasons why one person might respond differently to one drug versus another. And we know this is the case for all sorts of things. I've covered this ad nauseum on here.
It's not just it's not just the gear, it's the diet, it's the training, and that's the reason I understand now, that's the reason that you are so specific about how Fortitude is done, because it isn't a one-size-fits-all thing. There's options to figure. The Fortitude book basically allows you to figure out what works for you.
Yeah. As an aside, I'm going to just slaughter his name. Borga Fairley, I think, is pretty close.
Okay.
Used to go by Blade online. It's B-O-R-G-E is his first name. And he's Norwegian. He actually spent a little bit of time over on my board. And we've interacted a few times. And he's the inventor of MyoReps.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a cluster set technique that he came up with a while back. Now,
okay.
I should probably like the video so it'll show up on my Facebook. But I listened to an interview with him on the Iraqi Nutrition podcast. I think it is Iraki. Jumo Iraqi is his name. Anyway, it was funny. It was great listening to him because he was saying. It was almost as if he was reading my mind, or as if we'd had a mind meld at some point.
Yeah,
you know, previously, because everything he was talking about with the things you just mentioned, as far as tailoring programs for the individual and seeing how they respond and the variation and recovery abilities, and he actually focused on connected tissue being sort of a limiter, which I've sort of noticed as well, and muscle soreness. That's a great podcast. It just popped into my head that if people can find that, I just watched it on YouTube. It's on iTunes and a couple other platforms, I think.
Okay.
There's just so many, we're all different in so many different ways. And, people want that black and white answer because the thinking thing is not something that everyone wants to do. They don't find any intrinsic value in that. They don't find any fun in that. So I'm not everybody's piece of cake.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say cup of tea.
Cup of tea is what I meant to say. Mixed up my idiom.
Yeah.
It's not a piece of cake. If
there you go.
I'm not your cup of tea. Yeah. So some people just want to know, you know. Gosh, I've had a couple people on my discussion board. And like one guy came on one of the threads and he got in the book. And he just he was so frustrated. He actually sent me messages and emails about this. And his first post on the board is like, just tell me how to fucking lift. Yeah. Tired of reading all this bullshit. Just tell me what to do.
Oh my gosh. That's funny.
He was so pissed. And he didn't last very long. Everyone jumped on him and they sort of ushered him out off the board. But so it's the black and white answers aren't there from my perspective, and hopefully people understand why I say that.
Yeah.
And I think it's obvious that that's the case. You know, it literally, it's kind of common sense, but we don't want to see it because our ego sort of stand in the way.
Yeah, yeah. So. And in the case of podcasting, too, it probably makes for more sensational journalism to get somebody to tell you this is exactly what you need to do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there's probably that aspect.
Oh, that's how you sell stuff.
Yes.
Like, this is the best thing ever. Like, if that's, you know, that's...
Bigger that's biceps like in 3 weeks.
Marketing 101. Say it again.
Bigger biceps in 3 weeks. You know, the cover of a magazine. Yeah.
Quick, fast, easy, magic bullets.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, without a doubt. But that's, you know, if every time I try to look things up, you know, sometimes I'll just start with a Google search and, you know, you always hit those ads that tell you like the best, this, that, and the other. Yeah. And it's right there. Like that's, you know, that's what, that's just like the best bait for the human psyche.
Yes. Whether I want to or not, I buy that magazine because I want my biceps to grow, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, what do you say we take a quick commercial break? And when we come back, we've got a bunch of questions over at the forum.
Let's do it.
All right, guys. Dr. Scott Stevenson and I will be back in just a moment. If you've enjoyed Scott Stevenson's contribution to Muscle Minds, you can learn more about him, his products, and his services at fortitudetraining.net. And if you order any of his products or services, you get a free subscription to his message board where he answers questions daily. Go to fortitudetraining.net to learn more about all these products, services, and events offered by Scott Stevenson. Hey guys, Scott McNally here.
And this is VJ Peary.
You guys know us from here at the Advices Radio Network. Well, we also have another show, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. We've got everything from supplement reviews
to shout outs,
listener questions,
and of course, our weekly bodybuilding podcast reviews.
So check us out every Friday.
Or whenever you feel like cooking or doing your cardio or basically wasting time with us.
You can hear us at bodybuildingnerds.com.
Also on iTunes. Bodybuilding Nerds, it's time to get nerdy.
All right, guys, and we are back. Scott McNally here with Dr. Scott Stevenson. The show is brought to you by fortitudetraining.net. Go and check it out. Check out Scott's ebook and everything else he's got going on. Scott, your Instagram handle is at fortitudetraining. Is that right?
There's an underscore in there between the words. Yep.
Okay. So at fortitude_training. Follow along. And I wanted to mention that, just kind of like a brief side note, you always have your dogs. Sometimes we hear them in the show. You got a new pup added to the pack, right?
I do. Her name is Foxy. And she looks like a little fox. I think this, you know, we can cock stuff in our brains, you know, so I may be just making this up. I think we had a vet visit when I first got her just to check her out, and she had a little yeast infection in one of her ears.
Okay.
And I was telling them why I hypothesized that she's maybe part coyote. And they were just rolling their eyes at me like, yeah, everyone's dog is like something special about them, you know? But, long story short, I ended up picking her up, and I won't bore everyone with all the details as to why all this sort of made sense to me, that just too many things lined up. But she looks so much like one of my dogs who died years ago in the accident I think I talked about before.
Okay.
Like crazy, the resemblance. And I didn't realize that when I went up to get her, but I started seeing this. And I think that dog was a coyote mix, a koi dog. Huh. She was from California. Just because I played coyote howls that were either aggressive, like stay away, or come here, and she responded appropriately to them.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And Foxy's from up in the Tallahassee area, and she was found just roaming around. And there's a coyote issue there. There's coyote issues all over the U.S. now. Even like in New York, they have coyotes running around.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I wonder if she might be might have some coyote in her, just because there's some commonality between Tundra, my dog, who my old dog who passed, and Foxy, because they just look. I mean, I could show you. I think I sent you pictures in the.
You did, like, yeah.
You would think they're the same dog, maybe, if you didn't know. She's just smaller.
Well, whether it's a fact or not, I'm going to say that she is part coyote from now on. Runs with, and I'm doing this podcast today with Runs with Coyote at Instagram.
All right.
that'll have to be your new handle.
Yeah.
Runs with Coyotes. Yeah.
She totally looks like a little fox. She's so fast, too.
That's cool, man.
Yeah. Yeah. She's a great little hunter. She's a cool little dog. Very bright.
All right. So we've got a bunch of questions here. And to start us out, this question. And oh, I should mention too, guys, if you want to leave questions, we've got a thread. It's in the stickies. It's in the bodybuilding section at the Advices Radio forums. You can either go to advicesradio.com and click on the button that says forums over to the right, or you can just go to forum.advicesradio.com. Scott also has a thread over at his site, Integrative Bodybuilding, which you guys should check that out. It's a great message board. Scott's there every day answering stuff and talking with the guys. Lots of great information there. We can only do so much in a podcast, but that's another way to continue your education. So to start us out, this is CB96. He says, I'd really like to hear what Dr. Scott was suggesting as a topic on the last show about how to do a cut while in the off season. Specifically, for how long should one cut carbs and fats? Oh, I'm sorry. Specifically, for how long should one cut carbs and fats, or just lower the overall calories? Should you use Clen? Should one change their training style if they were training heavy? So a lot of questions here, from training to diet to supplementation. I'm sure there's going to be some variation there, Scott, but how would you respond, I guess, in a general way, not knowing exactly what this guy needs to do this, as a lot of people would call it, like a mini cut in the off season?
There's the reason I wanted to save this question, because there's so much there. There's this covers so many different topics. So the big picture has to be considered in looking at this. And that is that, where is the person in, what are their goals? And I presume this is during their off season. So they're trying to gain, and they're going to cut during their off season. And how are they making progress toward those goals? So, and when is their next show? So if the scenario is, the next show is 5 months out, and they've been using some sort of body comp estimation. I think I've talked about that before. So let's say you've got a reasonably good estimate of body comp, and you know you have 20 pounds of fat to lose to get down to 4%. And you can do those calculations pretty easily. And you've got 5 months before your show. Well, you're probably going to need at least 3 of those months, probably 4 maybe, to drop that body fat. So, in that point in time, you might do a small cut, but you might as well just keep on going, and then you're going to be cutting anyway. And I generally suggest people, when they diet down, take like a week off, like every 3 weeks or some period of time, where they, like we talked about in the last show, where they eat back up. So you'll have a prolonged time. Now, let's say that was sort of one end of the spectrum. Let's say now you're going to take a full year off. I heard you and Ken and S2H were talking about this.
Yes.
Yeah.
You were listening in on us.
I did. Yeah. I was waiting for another topic that you listed in the Facebook post, but I don't even remember what it was. I was just playing that, you know, off and on as I was going about my day. So let's say now you've got like 9 months.
Okay. 9 months before the show, are you saying? Before the next
contest? Yeah, 9 months before your show. So you're just into your off season. You got plenty of time.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, okay, I want to do about a 12-week diet. So I want to have no more than like maybe 15 pounds of fat to lose, something like that. So where am I now? Am I like 8 pounds of fat? Am I already at, like, let's say about that much body fat? I still got 9 months. in that case, if you continued on your path, you'd keep on adding body fat. Let's say you add another 15 pounds in the next, 4 months, and half of that is body fat. So now you end up in, 6 months with another 8 pounds of body fat. So
ouch.
That's not where you want to be. No. Now you got 20 pounds of body fat. You overshot. So you got to, just thinking about the body fat amount, just keeping that in mind, you need to keep that within shooting range of being in shape or being lean enough at the start of your prep so that you'll be in shape at the end of your prep when you're on stage.
Yeah.
So the mini cut's going to come in there as a period of time where you keep that body fat from going too high, from getting out, basically outside of your acceptable level for the beginning of your prep and for being in shape. So if you're already there at the, let's say, the 12 pound of body fat mark, roughly the best you can tell, then you would want to put in a mini cut. And with the idea of maybe losing four or 5 pounds of fat.
Okay.
Then, of course, you would hope that maybe you're going to get 50% muscle, 50% fat for the next month or two. And you just sort of, and everyone's going to be different as far as this goes. That's the thing. Some guys just add muscle, just like pouring water into a bucket, and other people have to fight tooth and nail for every gram.
Yeah.
And so the ratio of fat to muscle is going to vary as a function of genetics, as a function of the law of diminishing returns. The larger you are, the less muscle you're going to gain, the more of it's going to be fat.
Hmm.
So that's like that big picture is, I think, important to look and see, okay, I'm just getting too out of shape. I need to diet back down simply because I'm not going to be in good enough shape when I start my, at this rate, I'm going to be a slob and have to start my diet at 6 months out.
Right.
Which is not what I want. So the other thing is, of course, you can look at, and we talked about this maybe last show or two shows ago about indices of insulin sensitivity.
Yeah.
So if you start finding that you're holding a lot of water, you're not getting a good pump during your training, and basically if you're looking sort of watery, feeling it in the muscle, you're seeing it. It happens in the scale. A lot of times there'll be sort of like this, like a large jump or a more rapid increase in body weight.
Yeah.
Than can be explained by an increase in body fat. Like literally you're going wrong and you're making, a pound of body weight gain per week and you're looking pretty lean. Everything's going well. And then the next 2-3 weeks, you start to feel waterlogged. You're getting a little of the rings along your socks. You're not getting good pumps in the gym. You have that puffiness in your face, and you gain like 3 pounds each of those weeks.
Yeah.
Then you probably have lost some insulin sensitivity.
Yeah.
And the carbs, part of that water is a function of what insulin does to the vasculature, as well as you're spilling over, essentially. It's sort of the same process as what happens when you spill over when you're carbing up.
Hmm.
So that would be a time to try to drop that water, and diet back down, because that's telling you probably you're not going to be in a great place for making good gains.
That would make sense completely.
Yeah. So that's just a function of now you're losing that somewhat of a favorable ratio of muscle to fat because your insulin sensitivity is lost. So you can reset that pretty rapidly by reducing your carbohydrate. That's what the guy asked specifically for: how long should one cut carbs and fats, or just low overall calories? I would cut carbs, assuming you're taking in plenty to restore glycogen and you've used carbs to increase your caloric intake.
Yeah.
I would cut carbs. That's going to replenish, or that's going to restore insulin sensitivity more rapidly. Yeah.
Okay. What's the real difference nutritionally between a mini diet like this and an actual diet? Is there any difference outside of the length of time and the how far you take it?
It's going to depend on the person. Okay. There's some interesting data. They've done some pretty like extreme fat loss, extreme caloric deficit studies that are just a matter of weeks long. And you don't lose much muscle mass.
Oh, yeah?
A lot of this is in average people and doesn't always involve training.
Hmm.
So you can get away with a week or two of pretty rapid, a pretty deep caloric deficit.
Okay.
But the leaner you are, the more muscle you lose. And there's like one study that's looked at that, and everyone knows that. I mean, that's the risk. That's what happens when you're, you know, dieting down to stage ready body fat. Yeah.
I don't think everybody gets that, though. I think there's a fear that I go into a deficit and that means I'm going to start losing muscle immediately. You know, that people are afraid, which I respect it. You know, first of all, it's the unknown for some people if they haven't dieted before. But then their first fear is that, you know, I've worked so hard for all this. I don't want to lose what I've gained. And then that fear comes in. You know, the minute that I get flat and I don't look as big, then I obviously have lost muscle type thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, when you get really lean, and your body fat levels are lower, you do risk muscle loss more so than when you've got more body fat. But sure, you're right, definitely, about the psychological thing.
Yeah.
In the studies with like obese people where they just diet them, actually I think with diet and both exercise, the more body fat you have on average,
okay,
and I think this holds for individuals too, the greater the percentage of weight loss that comes from body fat.
Okay.
So if you've got a lot of body fat, you're going to lose more body fat than if you're already lean, when you're going to have a risk of losing more muscle. Hmm. So if you're someone who's like really pushed the limits, and you've got a lot of body fat, then you're going to lose that body fat more easily.
That makes total sense.
Yeah. So, plus, if you're holding water, that water will come off pretty quickly too.
Mm, yeah,
and that can just sort of, you know, renew your desire. There's this whole psychological thing that I bring up a lot, where people will, I think they sort of will kind of self sabotage when they don't like how they're looking. Most people are not going to be able to just put aside the fact that they don't like what they see in the mirror when their whole goal is liking what they see in the mirror. And just keep pushing up when the body fat levels are going up.
I've thought about that in the opposite factor. After you said this, that is, we've talked about this in the past. And when you first mentioned this and it got me thinking, it was in regard to not adding enough food, feeling like you're getting too fat, or having a mental block of actually reaching your full potential in size gains by limiting, subconsciously putting a limitation on how much you eat.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's the other thing. That's the other side of this. I'm glad that's a perfect segue, Scott. because in that long-term goal, if someone is constantly adding in mini diets in a way, you know, that try to keep their body fat levels in shooting range, but in doing so, you're also not using that time to add muscle mass.
Yeah.
So if your goal is, let's say, to move up a weight class, and actually I'm putting together something where you can sort of, I've actually got a table I've created with this that has, a body fat percent, here come the dogs, body fat percentage, at different weights and how long it will take to lose that body fat.
No kidding.
Yeah. You can do this for yourself, but let's say you want to move up from light heavies to heavyweights.
Okay.
So 198 to 224. So you want to put on 20 pounds of muscle mass. You know that. And you follow your body comp and you follow your fat-free mass. It's the beauty of doing body composition. So you're gaining and people do this all the time, and they're like, well, I'm surprised I didn't come in any bigger. I gained 30 pounds in the off season.
Yeah.
But how much of that was really muscle mass? Your body comp will give you some estimate of that. The water is kind of an issue, because even DEXA will mistake the water for normally hydrated fat-free mass. Your hydration will change. That's why people use a four-component model in research, which you can't get that done unless you're, you know, hooked up with a lab that does that.
Okay.
But if you're paying attention, and let's say you put on 30 pounds – and you only got 10 pounds of muscle out of that 30, and let's say you can kind of know that, then you can't expect to come on stage necessarily, unless you're someone who gained that on like really minimal doses, let's say, and then they turn on the gas and they recomp during their prep, which is very rare to see. But let's say that's not happening and you gain 10 pounds in your off season, and your body comp would tell you this. You can't expect anything more than to have 10 pounds by the time you step on stage, and probably less. So if you really have set a goal to, let's say, add 20 pounds of muscle mass from 1 year to the next, or by the next time you step on stage, you probably need to add 25 pounds because you're going to lose some during your prep.
Yeah.
If you want to add 10, then you probably need to add like 14 or 15 because you're going to lose some. So that's where the body comp will put you, will give you an idea. So if you, if you're dieting along and you're not liking where your body fat is, and maybe you're getting some of those insulin sensitivity issues, and you diet back down and you slow your progress, then you try to you know, add the food back in, and you never are really adding, you're not moving at a pace where if you sort of propagate it out, you're actually going to gain those 10 pounds of muscle, those 15 pounds of muscle anytime between the year 2036 because you keep on taking two steps forward and one and three quarter steps back.
Yeah.
Then this is where, you know, and this won't work for everyone, but this is where, you know, some people might say, you know what, this is what I'm going to do. Like, come hell or high water, I'm gaining 15 pounds of muscle mass. I'm going to need to put on 40 pounds. Mm. Pay attention to your blood pressure and your health and those sorts of things too. But if you can add 40 pounds and you know, and you should really get 15 pounds of fat-free mass, I would hope.
I would hope so.
For most people in most situations, not always, but. And then you have to hold that for some period of time. We've talked about the muscle memory idea. Mm. So in this case, those mini diets, while they're a good idea and you want to use them to restore insulin sensitivity, keep your body fat in range, and hopefully have the best ratio possible of muscle to fat gain. Mm. If taking those steps back, or basically putting the muscle gain on pause in the off season, means you're just creeping forward so slowly to your actual goal of muscle gain that you set out, you know, at the beginning of this prolonged off season.
Yeah.
Then you may just have to throw the mini cuts out to a certain degree,
And just kind of live with it, not get too fat, but continue working toward the goal. Hopefully, ideally.
Take your time. So sometimes there are different ways. This is kind of his question too. Sometimes just like a week of relaxed eating, like kind of according to your appetite,
okay,
will be enough. Like if you've got a training blast cruise where, you know, maybe 5 or 6 weeks during a blasting period, and then two weeks maybe. Hmm. Just having sometimes a week where you just sort of let off the gas in terms of all the food you're putting in can be enough to sort of restore yourself. It's not really much of a mini diet, but you will lose fat. So imagine, like, and this is the cool thing about this. You've got, and I haven't seen this study directly, but this is sort of my best guess, is if you're at a situation where you're putting in, let's say, 5,000 calories, you know, or even 6,000 calories, you're a 240 or 50 pound guy or something like that. You're eating a lot and you're not making any weight, any gains, like nothing's changing. 5,000 calories. So that's pretty much, has to be caloric balance. Like, pretty much, you're not losing muscle, you know, you're just holding steady. And then you drop down, and let's say you put in like 3,500 calories for just like, I don't know, like a week or maybe 10 days. And that's not starving. You've got plenty of protein, which will help preserve whatever muscle you have. Well, that's now a 1,500 calorie deficit compared to what was your maintenance.
Phew.
So there will be some adaptation. Your activity levels might change, but maybe not. Some people might feel better. They drop the water, they move around more. And this is what I've sort of found, is that you end up feeling better. So you pick up projects or whatever. Maybe you're not training as much. You're doing this sort of doing a cruise period.
Yeah.
This is one of the things I suggest people do with fortitude training if they feel like they're getting too much body fat. So now, if we just were to assume that you do actually have like a true 1,500 calorie a day deficit, let's say that ends up being more like 1,000, you know, because of, you know, some changes in your metabolism. There's some metabolic adaptation in the other direction that, you know, it starts to slow down a little bit. Even that, 1,000 calories a day for like 10 days.
Yeah.
That's 10,000 calories. That's roughly 3 pounds of body fat.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah, it's good. That's good progress then, without having to really even be aggressive. What?
Not at all. Not one bit.
No, he also asked about fat burners. Is it what are your thoughts about using a fat burner in these types of situations?
You could. It depends on sort of, you know, whether you. Some people use them anyway, in the off season, but yeah, you could. Like I said, you can diet pretty hard, so you could go full force. Klen on paper would have this repartitioning effect. You know, does this in animals? Doesn't seem to happen in humans. I've known people to take, and I'm not suggesting anyone do this. I knew a guy who, actually, he's dead now. yeah, he was a pretty extreme bodybuilder, but he used to take really, really large amounts of Klen. I'm not even going to say the number.
Okay.
It's off the charts. It's like more than double what anyone would ever take.
Okay. Wow. Wow.
And he found it increased muscle mass for him.
Hmm.
And I know someone else who's actually really well regarded. Actually, it's a brilliant scientific mind who I talked to one time who was playing around with ephedrine, trying to evoke a repartitioning effect. He was taking really large doses of ephedrine, trying to get it to bring about what you see in the animal research with beta agonists. But So, my point that I was trying to get to there before I got sidetracked with the Klen thing.
Sorry, that was my fault.
No, that he mentions Klen in there, you know.
Yeah.
That was the one thing he mentioned specifically is that, yeah, you could use that time to diet pretty hard.
Okay.
You just don't want to, and you can get away with that without losing a lot of muscle mass. So that would be one strategy. I can't say I've ever had anyone do this. But a strategy that would work, could work, which would be, it's interesting. That's, you know, I haven't thought of it really quite in this way. I'm just concocting this in my brain now, but I could see someone who literally uses in the off season, they're very, very conservative with everything they're using that would promote muscle mass gain. And thus also retards muscle mass loss, and they would spend most of their off season doing that, and then have periodic diets that are somewhat prolonged, like 3 or 4 weeks at a time,
yeah.
where they incorporate fat burners and sort of give it a go to try to drop muscle or sort of drop fat with holding on to muscle, and you know, God, I hate this is when people are going to want this is what people do with DNP. You know, they want to get this really fat, really fast, rapid fat loss. And I know you and Ken and Scott have talked about this on the other podcasts. So I'm going to that. Yeah, you guys talked about
it. At nauseam.
Yeah, the DNP thing. So, you can diet pretty hard for a couple weeks and still be okay. You just don't want to cut into your recovery sources that you just then – you know, you're slowing yourself down in the grand scheme of things because you need like another week to just get yourself straight after the diet.
That makes sense.
Especially like, you know, someone's done like DNP. Sometimes they feel a little screwy afterwards. It's so stressful.
Hey, it took me, you know, as we were speaking off air through text and stuff in the last week or so, it took me a few weeks to really feel like I figured out what I needed. You know, I adjusted down with a different diet. I followed S2H's protocol using fruits for my carb source, lost a lot of scale weight, which I think equated to 3 or 4 pounds of fat loss when I was done. I was about 10 pounds down, only using this for, I think, like under 10 days. But then afterward, trying to figure out what my new nutritional needs were, going back to my diet, that took a while, too. I almost felt that it was not quite counterproductive to have used the DNP, but at least for me, it did slow me down trying to figure out how to get back into fat burning and exactly where I needed to be versus I was in a solid groove before I changed it up and then rapidly lost. So it threw things off a little.
So you lost 10 pounds and you think you netted 3 to 4 pounds of fat loss. Did you have some water loss that then came back afterwards or?
Yeah, water loss and a lot of glycogen retention that went, you know, came back that, you know, that was the big thing was that, you know, it flattens me out, you know, which you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
And You know, and part of that, I'm sure, was the diet, but part of it was definitely the drug, you know.
Right.
And having come back, I had it was weird because, you know, you also gain water from the DNP and then you have to lose that, and but then fill That's the muscle back out. And it's so it was zany trying to balance it back out versus I almost feel like for me, I wouldn't do it again. I don't feel like I needed it. It was an experiment I wanted to do. And if I were to repeat that experiment enough times, I'm sure it could become more predictable. But I think for me, at least, what the conclusion I came to is that my best bet is to get into a groove. And then from there, it's kind of like a continuing conversation. I don't have to reinvent anything. I just know the next step that I need to take, you know?
Yeah, I'm not going to in any way, shape, or form profess that I'm a DNP expert, nor am I a growth hormone expert, for what it's worth. But
okay.
What you just reminded me of, or what you just said, and I got a bunch of questions on the water. What happened with your water? But it's sort of like what happens when people will diet for a show, and they've got all pistons firing on fat loss,
okay. And
then they just drop everything. They stop doing cardio. They stop taking their fat burners. They come off everything and then they're like, okay, I don't know what the hell to do because I've just changed so much. So I wonder, you know, a strategy there, and this is something I've mentioned before, is that to tapering off things, like take your time. You know, I know a lot of people are using low dose DMP.
Yeah.
You know, so I wonder if, you know, slowly, how long were you using the DMP? It was 10 days, you said?
It was only about it was a week to 10 days. And I kept the dose pretty low. I was only on 250 a day.
That is low, yeah.
Yeah. It was more about the calories, I think. You know, I switched the calories up, or I switched the carb sources. It was more about, you know, that switching the carb sources up and then pulling out my fats, which I hadn't gotten to the point yet where I had really removed a lot of fats. But the plan called for low fats to do it the way I was going to experiment with it. So I,
right.
you know, dropped the fats down low, which in itself would have probably triggered a lot more scale weight loss quickly.
Did your calories drop that much?
They went down some because I didn't, you know, I dropped the fats. I couldn't get in as many carbs as I needed to match my previous carbs. Plus fats were down. So part of it for me was...
Oh, you just switched. So your carbs stayed about the same or less, and then you pulled the fat. So your calories did go down.
Exactly.
Okay. Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
All right. I wonder, you know, what would happen if in another rendition of this, if you were to do the same sort of thing, and then, and maybe S2H can cover this, who is not me, by the way.
Yes.
So many people
seem
to think we're one and the same. Different person.
Too many Scotts.
Different Scott, yeah. You know, taper down the DMP. It's got a really long half-life, you know, 30-some hours. But you taper that down, and in the course of like 4 or 5 days of tapering, taper up your fats and shift your carbs over.
Yeah.
On a day-to-day basis.
I can see that.
Yeah, that would probably, you're only on for 7 or 10 days. So spending half of that time tapering back to where you were previously probably would be reasonable.
Yeah.
Makes me wonder if your thyroid wasn't particularly happy with you.
I wonder that too. So but nonetheless, I think next time I'll avoid it. And part of the reason is just the side effects. And just the fact that I just don't feel like you need it, or at least I didn't. It was just something, and I knew it at the time too. You know, Scott, I wanted to do it. I wanted to see. I wanted to experiment.
Oh, sure.
All the cool kids were doing it. I wanted to be part of the. No. it was fun though, and I did learn some stuff from it. But at the end of the day, I don't think that my end result was because I had done that. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's an interesting compound.
I am going to click on the next page here because we are onto the next page. This is from Bill 2. He says, "Hello there. I would really appreciate if Dr. Scott gave us a rundown on his last contest prep, how he dieted, macros, training versus non-training days, how he trained, cardio, etc., and more importantly, how he progressed through the contest prep on all these aspects. What adjustments did he make on all these parameters to continue the progression of fat loss and muscle gain preservation. I guess this could be a big one. This could really be like a show in itself if we wanted to go, you know, that deep. We did, and we should tell him too. When was the, so this was, what show was this, Scott, that you did? Was this Team U last year?
Yeah, last year with the Team U, yeah.
So if we're looking at, Team U is in about 10 days. So if this is going to be at the end of, that was actually like, it was July 4th, wasn't it? Somewhere the July 4th weekend.
Yeah, July 4th weekend. Yeah.
So if he wants to go back in the archives, Scott did talk about this coming into the show for at least a couple of episodes. We did break a lot of this stuff down. He talked about what he was doing with his protein. We talked a lot about his training and refeeds, things like that. But would you care to kind of give him some points here or maybe talk about some of the things that you found to be more interesting about this prep, Scott? Because I found it fascinating, and listening to how you did stuff, it made me think about a lot of things, and it taught me a lot of stuff too.
Well, the main thing, all my preps, they're all a little bit different.
Okay.
Because I end up in a different starting point, and then sort of life has landed me in different places. Everything from bizarre injuries. Last year was my dog Rusty was starting to succumb to the canine cognitive dysfunction. So my sleep was just horrible. But last year was the main, I tested out the idea of really high protein.
Yes.
And I was over 500 grams a day, and it really seemed like it was helping. Everything kind of fell to shit when I got to the show because of a rusty issue with my pet sitter, which I think I covered on one of those episodes too. But that seemed like that worked really, really well. The thing is, these questions like how did you do it or why you do that? I always sort of go back to like what does this person want to glean from it? You know, it's sort of like, you know, he probably really doesn't care exactly what I did. I
mean,
and this doesn't like, why would it really matter what exactly I did, except that from that he can get something.
Well, to play devil's advocate, I'll say just watching how other people do it, or when we've answered questions that are case studies, for instance, and we talk about how somebody specifically does something, I do get a great deal of education. It might not all directly apply to me, but there may come a point where some flags start going off. And I think, well, Dr. Scott did it this way, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah. Well, here are the things. Here's the things I would suggest. I've got kind of a bullet list of things that you can do. First of all, get the most from the least when you're dieting down. So, I think Jordan, I haven't played it yet, but I think Jordan just put up a video on his site on like knowing when to use your tools or something like that.
Okay.
Basically you want to just incrementally and as slowly as necessary, as little as possible, adjust calories down. Of course, in my case, use as little calories or cardio as possible. And then use whatever supplementation you're using to foster fat loss. Do that all as slowly as you can. So, you know, basically go make a change in your caloric intake and then wait until you're seeing that that's not working anymore before you change it again. So if you start with 4,000 calories and, you know, instead of dropping down 800 calories, you'll get more fat loss that way, but you still got a long prep ahead. Where do you go from there? You know, so get as much as you can from any increment in a caloric deficit or any supplement that you're using. Like at the start of your prep, kind of like what we just talked about with someone dropping from 5,000 to 3,500, you can just, at the beginning of your prep, just like take the junk food out, whatever crap you've been eating.
Yeah.
You know, Pringles or whatever it is. And that's one thing you can just simply do that. That'll give you a couple weeks worth of fat loss in a lot of cases.
I like diet energy drinks. One of the things I did the last prep was I was using these energy drinks that had several carbs in them, like 10, 15. And then I just switched that to a zero carb. That was like, you know, if you do that with several different items, switch from regular jelly to sugar-free jelly, you know, those kinds of things.
Yeah. Yeah. Just get rid of the junky, the non-diet type foods. And that can be part of, or just separate from just going from eating, figure out, of course, if this is a huge drop in calories, you want to do this. Some people can't do it, but some people, if you've been pushing your food in the off season, you can just drop back to something that's much more comfortable, that's more close to what your appetite would drive you to eat. And that's going to cause fat loss.
Yeah.
Because you've artificially raised your weight and your body fat by pushing your food in the off season.
That makes sense.
So that's another one. Don't sacrifice protein. That was the thing I was doing before, is I tried to really bump up the protein. A guy named Deutz and Robert Wolf had put together, they'd done some research and some, it's kind of controversial, but they've got a, if you measure whole body protein metabolism, you see that doesn't seem to be any plateau in terms of the overall protein balance that you see with feeding incrementally larger doses of protein. I think they've gone up to like 70 or 90 grams a meal. Hmm. And the inhibition of breakdown and the stimulation of protein synthesis is such that doesn't, like, you're not hitting a plateau even at that level. This differs from what you see in terms of muscle protein synthesis. And acutely, there seems to be a plateau anywhere between 20 and 40 grams. There's different studies, but there's actually 40 is about higher. So that's why people, it's one of the reasons people say don't eat more than 20 grams of protein meal. You're just wasting it. Well, 40 grams is probably a higher level. There's a couple studies out there that have found that the plateau is more like 40 grams.
Okay. At least in
terms of protein synthesis. Anyway, there's this, it's kind of a controversial thing. You really don't want to completely blunt protein breakdown because you have to have some protein turnover for repair.
Okay.
If you like completely blunted breakdown, then you would just, like, the mechanical disruption from the training would just accumulate and your muscles would just degenerate. Just, you don't want that. So there's a logical flaw in the idea that, you could just, infinitely inhibit breakdown to zilch and get away with it. But the protein's super important, and spread your protein out. So a nighttime protein, I just responded to a client today and we're changing some things up in her diet. And one of the things that happens some days because of her work schedule is she goes for like over 4 hours without any protein, and then she gets pretty hungry during those times. Doesn't always happen that way. And I said, more protein can actually help with fat loss. There's a study that came out of Stu Phillips' lab, Longlin et al. Longlin's the first name. Big one that was all over the social media, where they actually had great, and there are a couple other studies demonstrating this, that more protein means greater fat loss, at least sort of in untrained folks who take up training. So more protein when you're dieting down is not going to slow your fat loss. I mean, unless you just did like 2,000 calories or something crazy like that. Just the protein in of itself. Fat obviously is a different story, but you want to spread the protein out so as best you can, so you can maintain the inhibition and the stimulation of protein synthesis. The muscle full effect aside for the moment, that's a whole other different phenomenon.
Yeah.
This idea is called protein pacing. Arciero is the guy who's put forth this, and he's got some pretty good research suggesting that you do get greater fat loss and better preservation of muscle mass when you spread your protein out over the day. So with this client, I said, well, if you think you're going to run into one of those days where the meals aren't going to work, or you are, I said, mix together like a 60 gram protein shake with tons of ice, put it like in a nice shaker bottle. And then if you see, it's going to be like 4 or 5 hours before I get to eat. Then just about halfway through that, just drink like 20 grams of protein. Just drink a third of that shake. Glug, 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 you're done. And that's a way to keep the protein there. It staves off hunger. Protein is pretty satiating. It elevates glucagon levels, which inhibits appetite. I don't ever, if at all possible, take calories out of my intra-workout or my post-workout meals.
Okay.
So these people love them. I mean, I've got one of my post-workout meals is for years now has been these Amy's fat-free pizzas.
Oh, yeah.
I've mentioned before. Yeah, they're really good. And what I will do on those is I will scrape off the topping, but it still makes for like this, like kind of a super tortilla. It's a pizza tortilla.
Huh? And, wait a second. Scrape off the toppings. Like what?
What
are we talking here? I don't know if I like this idea anymore.
Olive oil. It's not really a very fatty thing. It's got no cheese on it.
Okay.
And yeah, that's one of the things I'll do is sometimes I'll scrape those off, but it hasn't happened every year. Every year is different. It depends on, how the fat loss is going, where I started off season with my calories. So if I've done it right, you know, I don't have to drop my calories that low at all. Jordan's talked about, he's a perfect example of this. His off-season calories are so high that he's dieting down at like 4,500 calories a day. You know, and that's like a deficit. That's getting him shredded because he was starting at 8, you know. So he's cut his calories in half. So there are years when I would just not even have to scrape the toppings off of those. And I'd be eating literally like pizza and sorbet during my post-workout meals because I don't sacrifice those. But what I do, this is a preferred method, not the only method, of course, with clients, but it's one that I will try out with them if they haven't tried it and they don't have a preferred diet. I always ask them, like, what works best for you? Mm-hmm. What do you like to do? And if we know something works, then I don't try to reinvent the wheel. But if they don't and they're really not quite sure, then I'll go with this idea of carbs in the intra and the post-workout meals, and then gradually limit carbs and make the non-training days of the week the days that are essentially giving you the fat loss, because those are the main hypocaloric days.
Okay, yeah. And so, we've talked about that before, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So mainly that's a matter of taking out carbs on those days.
Yeah.
And then fats, and not sacrificing protein. Usually saturated fats would come first. But if it's a natural competitor, you don't want to drop those too low. Their testosterone levels can go down. It's a guy. But that's going to happen anyway. Because when you're dieting really hard, your testosterone is going to drop.
Yeah.
I don't like cardio.
Yes. So
I like to do projects. So find a project that's life-giving, that's life-enhancing. You know, you could even make it like, you know, I've talked about this a bit too, like maybe, let's say, your wife or significant other or your dog is like, I hate it when you're dieting down because you're just mopey and you just sit around. It's like, well, now we're going to go to the mall. And my cardio is going to be going to the mall with you while you shop around, and I'm going to walk up and down the mall, keep myself busy.
Yeah.
You know, wander around while you wander around. And then you're spending time together. She'll love you for it. It's like, oh my God, like, we're going to the mall like 4 times a week.
Yeah.
I'm just buying little piddly items, but I love it when you diet. Let's go. Are you about to diet again, honey? Don't you feel like you should diet? Is there a show coming up? So no cardio.
I've talked about walking my dog. You know, that's been my big one. It's nice because it is, you know, something active to get out. But it's that aspect of giving something to her too that I really like. You know, because you're enhancing your life, but I'm enhancing her life. And it's cool because by the end of a contest prep, she's in great shape too. She gets really lean. It's kind of fun.
Oh, you actually see your dog's weight changes.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's American Bulldog Pitbull mix. And I'm telling you, she could be a pro if there was such a division. Her ability to maintain lean muscle while losing fat is crazy. The last show, I swear, she had a visible vein going through her chest. Like, you could see it through the fur. It was crazy. And then of course off season we get a little lazy. Plus it's Michigan here in the wintertime. It's too cold to walk too much. But yeah, her weight noticeably changes, and she takes on like a much more muscular look once we've been walking for an entire, you know, contest prep. It's pretty cool.
That's funny. You should do like dual selfies.
Yeah.
You know, like you and your off season with her and her off season. And then, you know, as you diet down and like you guys are both just shredded, you know, you start off and you're wearing parkas and you're all bundled up and there's snow on the ground. And then you're in Venice on the beach.
Right. You
know? Yeah.
She's 8 now. So I thought that it would slow down, and I can see that her progress isn't as rapid. Her body doesn't respond as fast as it used to, but she still is a trooper. She still has a lot of energy. So she's actually doing a lot more cardio. She's dieting now because I'm kind of dieting too. I'm just,
I gotcha.
Yeah. So we're both dieting again.
You know, they've done studies. There's one actually with older folks, just looking at activities of daily living and quality of life. And this can happen too, is that people will, if you exercise, then they'll get tired, and then their non-exercise activity thermogenesis will go down. Huh. Their spontaneous activity goes down. So they've actually done that. They've seen that in studies, and like, oh shit, we just kind of, defeated the purpose here, because people are so tuckered out, they stopped doing things. So your dog might be, she's getting older.
Yeah.
Obviously she is. So, you know, she might, she might still go on the walks and do those, but she may spend more time sleeping as opposed to running around and being rambunctious.
Which is okay by me too, because I don't need her doing that around the house, you know.
Right. Yeah, but that might explain why she she doesn't sound like she's adapting as well, but her caloric expenditures isn't as it's not going up as much as it was in the past.
That's possible for sure.
Yeah.
Anything else here that we should mention here? I know I kind of interrupted you.
No, it's good. That's pretty much it. The last thing, of course, fat burner. See, some people, this goes with the first thing I said, is like they want to add everything at the beginning.
Yeah.
And you know, you don't got to do that. You know, everything, you know, can be added incrementally.
Yeah.
You know, like one at a time. You know.
They're tools.
They are.
Why?
Yeah.
I've used like the analogy of setting up like my city used to have like a big firework display every, you know, around 4th of July. And if they were to do the grand finale at the beginning, then what's, you know, you throw the trend, the test, the mast, the halo, the T3 and the clen all in week one, then by week 16, the finale is already over, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you end up with this, we mentioned this in the seminar that you were at, John and I did, John had that, put that plot up there I made for him where, you know, you get this inverted U association between positive effects of drug X and toxicity. So the more you use, the more the drug will have its pharmacological effects, but eventually you run into toxicity issues. So, you know, that might look awesome for the first 5 or 6 weeks, but then if you try to stay on all that shit you just named for 12 weeks, you're a wreck.
Yeah.
You know, that's why people look dieted, like over dieted.
That's what I was going to say.
Drugged up. Yeah.
Exactly what it comes from. Yeah. Exactly what I was going to say. I think it's a newbie mistake, you know, because you have to remember, you know, we're not dieting you to look your best today. We are aiming for 16 weeks from now to look your best on stage. And so you don't necessarily need to have all these like hardeners that you're using, Tren and Winstrol, you know, when you've only been dieting for 4 weeks. So I don't care how vascular you are right now. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Let's just get the fat off.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough to, you want to be ready early.
Sure.
You know, obviously to some degree. So people like to be the earlier, the better sometimes, you know, and of course your social media and posting pictures and, you know, that influences us too. So that's why people will try to blast too much at one time.
I could see that. And I feel like there was a time, honestly, that I felt that way. If you look at, you know, until I was taught otherwise, it was a long time ago. It was explained to me and it made sense. But hey, if you look at the boards, a lot of times on your basic message board scenario for a cut, I've seen a lot of cuts that are gonna, you know, start with Winstrol. I'm dieting, so I use Winstrol for weeks 1 to 6 as a kickstart. You know, it doesn't make any sense to me to use the Winstrol for weeks 1 to 6 when you're at your leanest, you know, at week 16.
I'm sure you get these too. I think probably every coach does, and a lot of coaches provide these. I get questions about one-off diets, so to speak.
Okay.
And then I guess sometimes people ask me, like, tell me what can you design a drug stack?
Yeah.
And, you know, the diet thing, you know, you can kind of do that. But as a starting point, it's as if it's sort of a static thing. Like you just, when you're cutting, you're just doing this, you know, and this is what you do the whole time through.
Yeah.
And like literally what I'm talking about is a completely different situation where you might start and, you know, there's nothing, like there's no pharmacological interventions for the first 3 or 4 weeks because you don't need to.
Right.
Why do it? As long as you're giving yourself enough time,
right,
you know, to diet down. So it's an ever, ever changing phenomenon, just like with diet. Like your diets, you know, a given diet would maybe work for a few weeks, but eventually there's no longer any, there's no deficit there. Your body's adapted.
So let me ask you this then. So
yeah.
You know, with supplementation, it sounds as though you're saying, with the diet, you're saying that you basically have to respond to what's going on and adjust the diet from there as your body needs it. So is are you saying the same is true with your supplementation as far as, you know, adding gear in, that it you may be able to, say, create a rough outline for, you know, the compound. I might be able to do that, create a rough outline for the compounds I want to use for a cycle. But in actuality, my best bet is probably to apply those things, not necessarily just because it's 8 weeks out, for instance.
Right. You don't may not need to apply them at all.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, gosh, I think I heard, I don't want to misquote him, but I'm pretty sure I heard John Meadows talk about, and, you know, he talks really pretty openly about drugs a good bit, which is great, you know, because the information he's got is top notch. But
sure.
I think he talked about, I think it was Halo that he said.
Yeah.
That he had just like, he would just add that in because that's what everyone did.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You heard this one then. And then finally, after a few years, he's like, well, I'm going to just leave that out. He's like, I didn't notice a damn bit of difference. Didn't notice anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it makes sense with the more hepatotoxic compounds, the orals, or anything that's going to have, like, you know, like trend that's going to make you lose sleep or what have you, whatever it is, it's the harshest on your body to save those for the last, of course.
Yeah. Skip said that. I don't know if John Mayer said that too. I know Skip said that.
Yeah, Ken's real good about that, man. He's really good at questioning others and questioning himself. It's like, why do I do this? So I just left it out. I didn't notice a damn thing. Didn't make any difference.
Yeah. Which, yeah, if you can save yourself from what's probably the most or one of the worst, you know, toxic drugs in you know, anabolics, why not?
Well, of course. And then you have to be able to, you know, go with the flow as far as, you know, how something is affecting you. Sometimes, you know, you use whatever, some particular fat burner. It could even be like a product. Sometimes, you know, over-the-counter products, like a fat burner that their formulation has changed. Worked great for before, it doesn't anymore, yeah. For whatever reason.
Yeah.
Or let's say your diet has changed. And the diet, let's say that, you know, a supplement is lipophilic and it's better absorbed with a higher fat diet, and you were eating a low fat breakfast, just like having like a protein shake or something like that before you trained, and now you started adding, you know, you're eating 3 or 4 eggs.
Yeah.
Like there's a study that showed that whole eggs have a greater impact on myofibrillar protein synthesis than do just egg whites.
Okay.
It's like, okay, I'm going to add whole weight eggs in. And now you've got fats in there. And now whatever, let's say it's yohimbine, which gives people, some people feel a little wonky. I don't know if this is the case with yohimbine. I've never noticed this. But whatever it might be, that the diet that you have impacts the absorption. Mm. And thus how much you need of that substance, or how it makes you feel, or it puts it over your tolerance. So you don't just keep taking it.
Yeah.
No. If someone says, you know, okay, now you've got to use Anadrol. And Anadrol gives you cystic acne that's just like horrendous. Mm. You know, that's just terrible. He's like, okay, I'm going to look like shit. I'm going to look like, you know, a road full of potholes when I get up on stage. My skin's going to be awful. So don't do that. Right. So you have to be able to go with the flow. And it's about titration. It's like, every prep is different. I know you noticed this. It's what makes it so much fun, really. If it were the same each time, you're like, well, why do it?
Yeah.
But it's like titrating, which is the kind of a chemistry term for adjusting. Like you might titrate the pH of a fluid by adding sulfuric acid and sodium bicarbonate to it.
Yeah.
So you keep but the fluid's always changing. So you're always titrating. So your body fat isn't going to drop down exactly the same way. Maybe your job is different.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe your walk to work is different, or you've got a new dog that you need to walk a bunch more. Your dog's gotten older, you know, and doesn't want to walk or whatever it might be. And so now you have to do things differently. And I think I told the story once of a client I'd seen in the past. This has happened a few times now, but who went to use the same diet that he'd used previously with me. He was just following it week by week, or the number of weeks out, and his job had gone from being on his feet walking around to he was sitting down the entire time, and he was only working part-time, so he was like playing video games and that kind of stuff, as opposed to being on his feet for 12 hours a day. Yeah. And like 2 weeks out, he comes to me. He's like, hey, I'm not in shape. And I'm like, I'm doing all the exact same stuff.
Oh.
I'm like, yeah, no wonder.
Which is fine, yeah. But don't call me at 2 weeks out, right?
Yeah. he was just thinking like it's going to work, and it always worked before.
Yeah.
But circumstances are different. So you always have to sort of adjust, you know, and play with the variables as they present themselves. It's a new road every time if you just close your eyes. You know, I use this analogy actually with a client today who was asking questions about, she knew what the caloric expenditure was estimated by her Fitbit.
Okay.
And Fitbits, there's actually some research. They don't do a very good job of none of the wearables do a very good job of estimating.
Okay, so you've concluded that. This is a side note, but you've concluded that because we had gone through that, the Apple Watch.
It can't possibly, if it's using heart rate, you know, as a way to estimate, the relationship between heart rate and VO2 mm-hmm. is skewed during resistance exercise.
Okay.
And it will compare to aerobic exercise. And it varies depending on the mode of exercise and the person there. There's even, you know, that's even highly variable. And I could go on and on about that. But yeah, so it's all over the place. She was wanting to say, hey, does this matter? And I'm like, no, not really, because we're going to adjust everything based on what your body is doing. And the analogy I drew, I just came up with it, but I thought it was a pretty good one. It'd be like using like your caloric expenditure or what your BMR is supposed to be, and you know, all those sorts of things to estimate expenditure and intake. Would be like trying to drive your car just by burying your nose in your GPS.
Yeah. Oh God, people have done that too.
As opposed to watching the road.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you could kind of get there, but you'd run into potholes. You probably would miss a turn because there's going to be a delay.
Scott, like, if your GPS is anything like mine, you might drive into a lake.
Exactly. Like it goes offline for a second and then you're dead. So that's like, you know, if you supposedly are eating like 800 calories and you're not losing any fat, then like that's kind of a red flag. Your GPS is telling you that you're off course, like something. So we need to look at something here.
Yeah.
But doesn't really give you the refinement that you need for making adjustments. And it goes for all those things, you know. You may need to do cardio sometimes when you didn't before, you know. So it all needs to be titrated, I think. And that's what, you know, good coaches can do after they know your body. And that's what, you know, I try to get people to learn for themselves, because there's so much intrinsic value in being a self-tinkerer like that.
Yeah. All right, Scott. Well, with that, we are well into the show here. We've covered a bunch of good stuff. That second question, man, is there's a lot to that especially, but really both of them. So I think this is a good place to cut it off. What do you say?
I agree. Until next time.
Yes, there's always going to be a next time here at Muscle Minds. You know what? I would love to get Casey Reed back on the show.
All right.
I think he was a lot of fun.
The guy loves to talk, man. We can definitely get him on.
All right. I'll talk to him. And I know you had a couple guys you were thinking about bringing on. We should definitely do this sooner than later. Let's plan on it. Let's bring somebody on next week or next episode. What do you say?
Okay. Yeah. You got it.
That'll be fun. Are you training today?
Yeah. Yep.
What do you got? What do you have going on?
It's a fortitude training, heavy legs, loading sets for legs and pump sets for upper body.
Nice. I'm going to hit some chest and shoulders today. I got to train back at Quad's gym in Chicago yesterday with Andrea Watson.
Oh, right on. After how was she happy with how she looked?
She was happy with how she looked. You know, she works with Corn.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Yes, of course.
So they were in close contact, emailing back and forth through the whole weekend. And she looked really good. Andrea looked great. She's made a lot of progress. She made it a huge goal of hers to bring her legs up. Her quads are definitely, they're like, I honestly feel like she, which is a weird place to be, to say, she doesn't need any more. That's what I'm going to say. She doesn't need any more quads now, which I don't know. I've never been to a place where I've thought like, well, I've got enough quads, like ever. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
So she's got that covered.
Have something else.
Yeah, yeah.
For you. Yeah.
Right, right. So she's got that covered. She got 13th place, which it was a good show. It was a hard show.
How many in her class?
There was, I believe, three or four call outs. So, it was decent. It was a good show, like I said. And she went in knowing that this would be her first attempt at a national show, and she wanted to see how it went. And I thought she looked awesome. She's going to do Team Universe here in a couple of weeks. And so now she's brainstorming, like, well, what can I change? You know, she obviously she can't make the size improvements she wants to make in those few days. But it's like the stuff we talked about in the beginning, presentation, things like that. So she's going to use that as an experience to improve. And I think she's going to be really fired up because now she has a good idea of how she stacks up and what she needs to do. I feel like, you know, and what's realistic goals in my mind? If you get 13th, then hey, let's aim for cracking the top 10 the next time around, you know, in the next season.
Yeah, I'm pulling up her pictures here. I think she could. Yeah, she's got plenty of quads.
Yeah, really, no.
Her posing could be improved a little bit, I think.
Yeah, so she could work on that a little bit. And, you know, everything else, like I thought her stage presentation personally, it looked really good, but things can always look better, you know, and that's what she realizes. She said in her words that she feels stiff on stage, you know, so she doesn't feel comfortable. She doesn't feel as confident as she would like to. So, and I think part of that is just time. This is, you know, she hasn't competed much. I helped her kind of as an emergency coach last year. For the last several weeks of her diet, and she did really well. We brought her into Emerald Cup. She got second there, did another show and got second. And then this year she was in a stiff class in California. I believe she got third there, but it was a stiff competition. So she obviously has, you know, she's solidified that she can be a top place finisher at some really decent state, you know, and regional level shows. Yeah. And it's a big jump then going to a show like Junior Nationals. So she's going to try to work on that. But it was a lot of fun, like I said. And we trained at Quads. Man, great gym, Scott. They call it Quads for a reason. There's so much leg equipment there. I just couldn't train legs. I was too depleted after the weekend.
Yeah, I got to always, on trips like that, I have to train legs first, or otherwise you're walking around and just, like, it's no go.
There was no way. I was like going from hotel room to hotel room, checking on people and stuff like that. So that was enough leg work for me.
Yeah. I haven't been to that gym. I like to go. That's Ed Cohn's home gym.
If you get a chance, save leg day for it, because they have so much good leg gear there. It's named Quads for a good reason.
Okay. Yeah. You couldn't have a gym named Quads and at least not have decent leg equipment.
Right. Exactly. You know? Dude,
yeah.
All right, well, let's get to it. Guys, I hope you've enjoyed this episode. For another episode of Muscle Minds, I'm Scott McNally with Dr. Scott Stevenson. Check out the Fortitude Training ebook. Check out everything Dr. Scott Stevenson, Integrative Bodybuilding. Go to Advices Radio. Go to the forums. Ask questions for the next episodes. Also, follow at Advices Radio Network on Instagram. Guys, we will see you soon.
Adios.
Voices Radio Network.